You're listening to Seattle Sports Saturday with Lydia Cruz, Curtis Rogers, and Taylor Jacobs on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Well, happy Saturday to you. Welcome in. This is Seattle Sports Saturday on 710 ESPN Seattle. I'm Curtis Rogers, joined by champion Lydia Cruz and champion Taylor Jacobs.
Woo!
Oh, titles. You guys don't have your championship rings on right now?
No,
it's
not yet.
Unfamiliar and foreign feeling to me, too, to even hear that.
Yes.
So thank you.
Yes. The Blues and the Toronto Raptors champions are not phrases I thought I would hear anytime soon.
No.
If you ever play like a sports video game and you simulate an entire season and you end up with a champion that like isn't like a typical champion, it feels like that's what this like. The last couple days has been like seeing the Raptors and Blues win, but like I welcome that because yes. I'm so tired of Boston winning everything, and there was that possibility still mm-hmm. in Game 7 with the Blues and Bruins. But shout out to your Blues, Lydia, for saving us from the misery that would have been three Boston teams winning a title in the same calendar year.
Pretty impressive. I just want to do shout out Boston because they are an incredible team. It was everything you could want, I think, out of a series, whether you're a casual hockey fan or an intense hockey fan. You got Game 7, and Game 7 are the two greatest words, I think, in sports, because anytime you can amp up that excitement, hockey, I think, already as a playoff sport is the most exciting. And Game 7 is what it's all about. So I do want to say shout out to Boston. Also, Maura Dooley, who we work with. And
that's right.
I felt almost bad. Almost bad.
Almost bad.
About, you know, rocking my jersey and
but
being
I mean,
excited. But I mean, not quite bad.
They've
been okay. They've won a few things, so they're all right.
They're okay.
So you got the Blues stopping a city dynasty,
yes.
as it were. The Raptors stopping an actual dynasty.
Yeah.
The Warriors.
And again, just to kind of echo what Lydia said, the Warriors, what Warriors, and living up to their name to the full degree. Injuries, being down, defensive styles that they had never seen in a season. They were the champs, they fought like champs, and they went down like champs. And what a great team, and that five-year run is one of the most special runs in NBA history. And it may not even be over. You may still be able to re-sign Clay, or you will most likely be able to re-sign Clay and maybe add some more talent on that team as well. But, yeah, just unreal to see the Raptors do what they did and defensively just swarming all over the Raptors. And I've never seen a performance like that in the NBA, at least recently.
Yeah, and I mean, over the last 5 years, we've known the Warriors to be this team that can put up points in a hurry, and Toronto absolutely neutralized them throughout the series and just forced Golden State to get uncomfortable. And yeah, they were playing, you know, a couple guys down, but even with Golden State having, you know, two guys out, still a championship ball club. They're still a team that can win on any given night, and just an incredible performance by Toronto, incredible performance by the Blues. Unfortunately, there wasn't a third championship. You know, it's cool to see champions get crowned. Like Friday night, it's like, okay, so no one's going to win
wow,
a title tonight.
Yeah.
Like,
wow.
What's up with this?
Well, tomorrow, Seawolves.
Oh yeah,
Seawolves might be able to go
and you're
back to back.
Your jersey, yeah. Which I love.
Got my Seawolves jersey here. Jessamyn McIntyre, sideline reporter extraordinaire, not doing this game, but major fan. Yeah, so I believe they're down in San Diego.
Yes,
as they will take on San Diego tomorrow evening.
So that's exciting, man. And Seattle, yeah. Another chance to repeat. Champions in
we
the
need to turn into
here.
Boston, so we need to start winning more titles.
Get
in
our
every
dynasty
sport.
Going.
I'm
yeah, doesn't matter the sport. We want the title.
Give it. You Give got it a title us. Up for grabs.
We want it.
That's our. That if there's one thing you can take from us today, that's it. Coming up today, we've got a lot to get to. Seahawks minicamp wrapping up. Mariners. With some interesting headlines yesterday coming from them. Let's not waste any more time. Let's get into today's big three.
Number one.
Well, it's the final week of Seahawks offseason activities. They are in the book, mandatory minicamp. I can speak, you guys. I can do it. Wrapped up this week, the players now have 6 weeks off before training camp begins and the preseason gets rolling. This is the time that gives Pete Carroll some nervous energy. As he said in his presser on Thursday, this is the time when we will win games, right? This 6 weeks where they try to arm everybody with as much information and good advice as they possibly can to take care of themselves and their bodies over these next 6 weeks. They are able to contact them. They can answer the phone if they call, but really it's more, hey, how are you doing? How's your family doing? We can't really talk football over these next 6 weeks. So we'll hear from Pete Carroll here at 9:15 a.m. We got lots of great sound to dig into from him. What we know in these past couple of weeks, the defense has been pretty difficult to evaluate. So many players hampered by injuries, sidelined by injuries. Also, offense is just more favored, right, in any of these offseason activities. You don't have pads on. You can't be too physical. So it's hard to get a full picture of what the defense is and where it's at right now. The backup quarterback competition, very much alive. Pete Carroll likes what he's seeing from both Geno Smith and Paxton Lynch, although that may not have been exactly the national pundits or what other local pundits are saying from the backup competition. We'll discuss. Plus, the wide receiver group certainly impressing here early on.
Number two.
Well, for those holding hope that the king would return to the throne, return to his old reign, they're going to have to wait a little bit longer, I think, as Felix Hernandez pulled himself out of his first minor league rehab start because of fatigue. Felix exiting the game yesterday after throwing just 31 pitches for the Tacoma Rainiers, as the team coming out and saying that he pulled himself because he felt worn down and it was not due to any sort of pain from his injury sort of reemerging. Hernandez allowing 2 hits. 2 runs in 2 1/3 innings against San Antonio before coming out, struck out 2 and walked 1 as well. So questions still remaining about King Felix's future here in Seattle. What type of pitcher can he turn back into? Where will he fit in the starting rotation? Will he fit in this starting rotation? Still a lot of questions out there. And with some of the other news that Curtis will get into here about some of the other pitchers in the minors, some of the other pitchers at the major league level, the strategy in which the Mariners are approaching their starting rotation with an opener or a headliner, as they like to call it. There's a lot of questions, and specifically around this rotation this season and what it will look like heading into seasons in the future as they continue to rebuild this Mariners franchise, hoping to make the playoffs here in 2020-2021.
Number three.
Well, as you said, Taylor, the Mariners with a lot of question marks in their minor league system right now in terms of pitchers. Well, they had a great night on the field last night, stomping the A's 9-2. J.P. Crawford with a couple of doubles. Good to see him back out there. But in addition to the Felix news yesterday, also the headline coming down the wire, the team has decided to demote Justice Sheffield, prize pitching prospect, from AAA Tacoma to AA Arkansas to work on some command issues that have plagued him throughout the season's first 2 months. You may remember Sheffield as the prize return in the James Paxton trade that sent him to the Yankees organization. Sheffield came over with a lot of hype. He was a top 30 prospect in baseball, according to Baseball America and MLB.com. A lot of great news about him coming to the organization, but so far in 2019, it has been a struggle for the lefty, the young lefty. He's only 23 years old, so there is certainly time for him to figure this out. Hopefully, he can get it figured out in AA Arkansas. But just not a great headline to see yesterday, especially when, by all accounts, Justice Sheffield, great guy. But with this news coming down, you got to wonder, like, is starting pitching maybe his future, or could this be a precursor to something else? Maybe he gets sent to the bullpen. You don't quite know what the next couple of years, or at least the next couple of months, are going to be for Justice Sheffield. So hopefully he can get it figured out at the AA level, maybe bring him back up to AAA. But also, this AAA, they're using Major League balls now, and Major League balls over the last couple of years, a lot of question marks as to whether or not they're juiced.
They're jumping.
They're
jumping.
You've got stadiums in the PCL that are, a lot of them are at altitude, where you see balls just fly out of there. And offensive numbers get inflated like crazy. So maybe it's partly due to that. Hopefully it's due to that. And it's not something bigger with Justice.
True, but it is also better to have those conditions replicated that are at the major league level, so you know what your issues are before you are promoted when it's, you know, too soon for you. And unfortunately, yeah, he had such a great spring training showing. Remember seeing him down there. There was discussion about whether he would be on that roster heading to Japan because he was so good. And they ultimately, at that time, really didn't want to start using up his clock and stuff. So he ended up in AAA. And now it looks like it's been for the best, because that's the worst thing when you're promoted too early and then your confidence suffers and your ultimate future is in jeopardy. Something that happened to Mike Zunino, I think. And it can be hard to shake that moving forward.
Yeah, it's weird. Like you mentioned Sheffield's spring training performance. He looked really good.
He did, and his attitude was amazing. We talked to him. He was so positive. He was just a competitor. So I expect him to bounce back. I think he has a right attitude. You mentioned it, Curtis. He's so young still.
Yeah, 23 years old. Just a cherub out there.
Well, on the flip side of that trade, Paxton actually getting booed off the mound there in New York.
He's got an ERA
classy
over four.
New York.
I know.
Yeah.
So
I mean, just knowing what we know of James Paxton and also of New York fans and New York media, like, I wish that that wasn't a surprise to me, but unfortunately, it's just like, oh, yeah.
Yep.
We could see that coming.
Sounds about right.
Yes. It was a matter of time, not if, it was when.
Yeah. Also, today, Taylor, like you mentioned earlier, Seawolves trying for a repeat of their rugby title this weekend. And then we'll talk about it a little bit later today in the 10 o'clock hour. But Clay Thompson, maybe the most notable Coug ever.
Maybe the most notable pro.
Washington
pro.
Product.
Yeah. UW, Wazoo, Gonzaga, Western.
Right up there.
Put them all together. I think Clay might be at the top.
Yeah. Tearing his ACL in game six of the
NBA
Finals.
Trying to go
finals.
Back in the game after that. Like, saying, coach, I want to go back in.
Running in the hallway to try and warm up. Jumping, apparently, in the locker room to try and get loose for 2 minutes.
That is a warrior.
Pleading
right
with them to try and let him back in the game. He comes back in to shoot the free throws just so he can come back to the game.
He's a different breed, man.
He is.
Mm-hmm. He's, man.
And we've seen a couple of them here. You know, Richard Sherman essentially on his feet after tearing his Achilles. There's just some athletes out there that are a different kind, man. I mean, we saw it in the NHL finals too. Zdeno Chara is out there
with a broken jaw,
not really being able to talk to his teammates. He's a captain of the team, making nonverbal hand motions to communicate with his teammates. It's just crazy. Oh.
And here we are, you know, sitting in chairs with computers in front of us, and like not. Anywhere.
I got heat exhaustion at Seahawks practice one time, standing on the sidelines.
So
holla at your boy.
Yeah.
Need my chips with the dip.
Coming up in this hour, is Russell Wilson's contract already starting to look like a bargain? We get into that in just the quarterback landscape around the NFL. But coming up next, Seahawks minicamp and OTAs, they are in the rear view. We're now at the NFL summer break point. So what are our biggest takeaways from what we've seen over the last couple of weeks? What did Pete Carroll have to say about his boys out there on the field? We get into that next. Curtis Rogers, Lydia Cruz, Taylor Jacobs, Seattle Sports Saturday on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Seattle Sports Saturdays with Lydia Cruz, Curtis Rogers, and Taylor Jacobs
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Make sure you download the 710 Sports app. It is driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Seattle Sports Saturday right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. If you want to join in on the conversation at any point, the Coors Light text line is there for you, 710-710. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we've got question of, is Russell Wilson's contract already starting to look like a bargain across the National Football League? We answer that question. And then also some of the best sound we've heard this week on the station or just around sports. Got a lot of fan stuff from a lot of title celebrations with the Blues and the Raptors. That's coming up around 9:45. And also, Mike Salk taking shots at people, which is that's no news. That's
stunner.
And them taking shots back.
Yeah. So
stone cold stunner.
Yeah. So we'll get into that coming up at 9:45. But the Seahawks, they have put a bow on OTAs and minicamp, and now it's summer break time. Teachers gone, parties on, and 6 whole weeks now between the end of minicamp and the start of training camp. It's one of the weirder times in the NFL schedule. And this is the time of year where I think the craziest headlines of the season come out because just kind of re-racking my brain, and we talked about this a little bit on Seattle Sports at Night this week, where you get the weirder story. Like Jason Pierre-Paul on 4th of July losing a couple fingers. Malik McDowell, as many Seahawks fans remember, getting in the ATV accident. And then, I think it was last year, Janoris Jenkins found a dead body in his basement.
I forgot it. And then he was out of town. And he actually was not involved in any way, but it still happened in his house, which is so, so weird.
Yeah, terrible story.
So, I mean, just like this time of year, between mid-June and the end of July, like, brace yourself for some weirdness. Like, it's going to get weird.
And it makes coaches understandably nervous because also athletes just don't live normal lives.
No.
They aren't like the, hey, we're going to do 9 to 5 during the week. We're going to have a normal weekend. This is like their time to go and have fun and be with their families, be with their friends. And it's just not a normal, balanced, always lifestyle. So then you get some of these extremes and these stories. Pete Carroll mentioning what his message is to the team about these next 6 weeks.
To make sure that we really maximize this six-week period, this is an extraordinarily competitive time. So many things can happen. Guys can go south on you. They can get better. They really can make it. Changes can occur right now, and we're really trying to be focused about it.
Trying to keep everybody on that same message, or you know, just with their mind on football.
I feel like Pete Carroll is that parent talking to a kid, and the kid's eyes are wandering all around and like not paying attention. It's like, hey, I'm trying to get it through to you. Like, pay attention. Like, I'm trying to tell you what to do. And the kid's like, yeah. I think that's kind of what this last little bit of minicamp was like. And I mean, as a person in the front office, you're probably just like, well, I've done all I can do now.
Yeah.
See you in 6 weeks. But that's off the field. On the field, the last couple of days, just the last opportunity, last looks before training camp, position groups really standing out right now. I think you've got wide receivers, which is going to be, you know, with the uncertainty of Doug Baldwin, obviously, there's going to be a lot more attention paid to that. And then the amount of young players that you've invested in the wide receiver group, that's obviously going to be where a lot of people's attention gets drawn to. And then in the secondary, you've got question marks at safety. Who are you going to start opposite of Bradley McDougal? Is it going to be Marquise Blair? What about Delano Hill or Tedrick Thompson? Also, what do we think about Delano Hill going by Lano Hill? Now?
Lano Hill. You know, I don't think it's totally chosen by him. Sounds like that's what people have referred to him. I think Trey Flowers mentioned that that's what he's always called him. So, I mean, sometimes you don't get to pick your own names. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're given to you. If that was one chosen by him, hey, you know, who am I to?
He's leaning into it, so I guess he must be okay with it.
Okay.
I'm not sure Tedrick Thompson chose T2 either, or if it was chosen, greatness was chosen for him.
Yeah, but I mean, T2 is the best Terminator, so it's fitting.
It is, yeah. It works.
It fits.
All right.
Yeah.
So the position groups that I think a lot of people are keeping an eye on, wide receiver, defensive back, maybe also, or well, not maybe, but definitely defensive line too. Right now the Seahawks are in a position to where there's going to be a lot of roster shakeout over the next, at least during training camp. And it's going to be interesting to see how these position groups and how the depth chart really sorts itself out.
You mentioned the defense there, C-Raj, and that is a position in general that they've had to, according to Pete Carroll, sort of play out with their imagination because they are missing a lot of people because they've been sort of hampered by injuries.
We're using our imagination. That's what I tell you. We're using our imagination right now. There's 6 or 7 guys that we think will wind up playing a lot of football for us that we're holding out right now. So, but those guys will be ready for camp and ready to roll, and it'll be a pretty nice group. I'm really excited about Bobby, KJ, and Michael. Those guys bring tremendous experience and playmaking more than we've ever had. And so I'm anxious to get those guys on the field at the same time and see what they can do. I think they're going to help other guys play well. I mean, I know they will. Their communications and the savvy that they bring, you know, that's all you could ask for. So it's going to be a really fun group to put together.
Mentioning, like, the three of the more well-known names, at least two of the more well-known and established leaders on defense, but saying, yeah, that's tough when you kind of have to fill in the holes with your mind in a position where you can't already get that many reps in the offseason because everything is favored towards the offense.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and there's actually not a whole lot of questions for this team heading into this six-week break. That being the biggest question, I think, remaining for the Seahawks team is what that sort of back end looks like. But I think in compared to last year, leaving for this six-week break, as a Seahawk fan, you have to be ecstatic about where this team is and where they're heading, because if they could win that many games last year with the team they had and where they were, and the rookies are able to ramp up the way they have, or at least the way the coaches are telling us the way they have, I think we're ramping up for a Seahawks team that can contend not only for the NFC West, but maybe for an NFC championship as well.
Last year it felt more personnel related. It was more questions about culture and personnel, and you don't have those.
You were implementing a new offensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator, new offensive line coach.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there were varying degrees of success on the offensive side of the ball. Certainly with the offensive line, it was night and day better than what it's been, or at least what it was under Tom Cable. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, with the amount of turnover that we saw from the LOB era to what it was last year, I don't think you can be discouraged by what you saw a year ago just because of how many interchangeable parts there were, guys not knowing, you know, who was going to start or whatever. Pete talked about Bobby and KJ being there, and I think those guys, like, we know what they are on the field, but I think their biggest value to a young defense like this is off the field, because these are guys who have been a part of one of the most successful defenses ever. Not just a part, but like a major factor in the reason why the Seahawks of this last decade have been so successful. And to have young players under like Cody Barton and Ben Burkervin in the linebacker room, and then Marquise Blair in the secondary, and just, you know, young guys all over the place, to have valuable guys like that in your locker room to show them, like, hey, this is how it gets done. Like, if you want to play at a level that I've gotten to or that I've seen from other guys, like, follow my lead. I mean, if I'm Ben Burkervin and Cody Barton, I am in the hip pocket of KJ and Bobby at all times.
Yeah, and other than having Bobby's deal done right now, I think this is an ideal situation for the Seahawks because – they have their two veterans there present at these mandatory mini camps and OTAs, and they may not be practicing, but they're there, and that allows the rookies and the younger players to get those reps. And we know how valuable these reps are because there aren't that many. And we hear stories out of Indianapolis about how Andrew Luck hoards all of these reps and that backup QB is really tough in Indy because of that, and it's hard for them to get any sort of continuity with the offense. It's almost the opposite here in Seattle, where we're getting to build that continuity as a team in the off season before you get to the regular season, so that that relationship is there, so that if a Bobby has to sit out a play or KJ has to sit out a play as their bodies start to get a little bit older, you can allow that. And the step down isn't a step down when they step off the field.
Taylor, you mentioned the Seahawks and where they may fall in the NFC West. Well, coming up next, we're going to take a look at the NFC West and also answer the question, is Russell Wilson's contract already a bargain in terms of the rest of the NFL? That's coming up next right here on Seattle Sports Saturday on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Seattle Sports Saturdays with Lydia Cruz, Curtis Rogers, and Taylor Jacobs
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Coming up in the very next segment, a lot of great sound from championship celebrations. A lot of wild sound from championship celebrations, including Drizzy himself.
Coactuses, chips with the dip.
Yeah.
Poetry.
Toronto got weird.
We got weird as a city.
Yeah.
But fun fact, my cousin told me this, who lives in Toronto and my family in Toronto. No arrests. Zero arrests.
Congrats, Canada.
In the city of Toronto.
Very Canadian.
And one of the things that the Toronto Police Department did is that they brought in a bunch of old police vehicles, old buses, old cars, and they kind of parked them throughout the streets to help block traffic and for people to kind of climb all over. And if they wanted to smash those, they could smash those all they'd love.
Genius idea.
Right. So Shout out to the city of Toronto for really expecting and handling this championship very well, but also not well.
Yeah.
Which we'll get into later.
We will. Coming up also in the 10 o'clock hour, we will give you our big three from a national perspective, if you can't already tell, Stanley Cup and NBA Finals on the forefront of our minds here, but also some Women's World Cup action going on too. But right now, the NFC West in an interesting position where you've got the Rams, who had such an amazing season last year, taking it all the way to the Super Bowl, losing in the Super Bowl to the Patriots. You had the Seahawks also making the playoffs. And then there's really no middle class in the NFC West right now, because the Cardinals and 49ers, they had the first and second overall picks in the draft, the two worst teams in the NFL rounding out the division. Looking at the division right now heading into training camp, it's going to be really tough to predict how this shakes out right now, because the Rams added a lot in free agency. They also had the number two overall pick, taking Nick Bosa, who a lot of people consider to be even better than his brother Joey. You've got the Cardinals with the number one overall pick, also a new head coach in Cliff Kingsbury, Kyler Murray there. Just a weird season that could possibly happen there. You don't know if Cliff Kingsbury is going to have any kind of success, because he didn't really have success at Texas Tech. Now you force him into the NFL. Will his offense translate, and has he surrounded himself?
The ladies will love Mr. Kingsbury.
Ooh. Mr. Kingsbury.
I mean, at least we know according to Stephen A.
Stephen A.
Well, this dude Kingsbury.
You know, really upset that he's getting a shot in the NFL over some people with more experience. But you mentioned, there's still a big, huge question mark. When you've got that franchise in general, I think, has had so much – it's been a wild ride to be an Arizona Cardinals fan. Because not that long ago, you had the coach of the year. You were on Amazon's All or Nothing show. You were featured there. You were given the Seahawks headaches playing against them. And now you're kind of a dysfunctional mess. Maybe the dysfunction has always been there. Because I think, as you've seen with Steve Keim, sometimes it's been there.
Yeah. But, Steve Keim.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa, dude.
He's very, like, Scottsdale.
Yeah. That,
him and Bruce Arians, when they were together, like, that was about as Scottsdale of a combination as you could get. Just two guys who, you know, looked like they were perpetually sunburnt.
Yeah.
And, you know, driving their Miatas around.
Their frosted tips grew out eventually. Yeah.
Bill Bidwell, their owner, he's another guy. He, like, spikes his hair, too.
Oh, man.
It's, like, that is Phoenix through and through.
But then, so then they've got uncertainty. You're wondering, I think the biggest question, they're just a huge question mark in Arizona. With the Rams, you mentioned, Curtis, is it, will you have a hangover from being in this Super Bowl last year? Will you have, I don't know, you've got a lot of stars on that team. Will they succumb to the LA star mentality and crumble under that pressure? Jared Goff needs to be resigned here, or needs to be extended here pretty soon. And now Carson Wentz has a deal, and that question has come up. They say that there is no reason why he wouldn't get a deal done. I know that Sean McVay was speaking to this recently. I'm going to pull it up while you guys talk.
Well, you look at the Rams right now, and Todd Gurley, like, he was such a good running back at the beginning of the season last year.
Yeah.
And then disappeared at the end of the season. Disappeared to the point where the Rams took a third-round pick on a running back, Darrell Henderson of Memphis. And from what we've heard out of OTAs and minicamp, they are very high on Darrell Henderson down in L.A., and you just paid Todd Gurley, who I believe this is the first year of his new deal. So, like, you're paying a running back top-flight money, which, like, Todd Gurley completely reset the market. He reset the running back market in the same way that C.J. Mosley reset the linebacking market, which, I mean, when Gurley got paid, you saw Le'Veon Bell tweet out, like, oh, yeah, you know, just like the eyes emoji, which means everything in sports.
Absolutely.
It means nothing and also everything at the same time.
But I think, unlike with C.J. Mosley, when everybody was kind of the more head scratch, really, about that, nobody felt that way about Todd Gurley, really, at least in my mind. It didn't seem like there was as much surprise because, this guy has done insane things in the National Football League. He spoke to recently in his mini camp about how he's doing in his recovery process.
Yeah, man, I'm fine. I'm training. I'm doing what I'm doing in the off season, what I've always done up to this point. So just part of getting ready for, you know, training camp and the season. I feel like everything's been going great. You know, stay in touch with Coach and Reggie and the strength staff. And, I mean, still see my teammates. So everything's been going well.
That's also what Sean McVay pretty much echoed. But he's probably going to have a little bit of a competition, as you mentioned, in that running back room. That's not high pick.
And they've also got to deal with the Super Bowl hangover that exists for teams that lose. Like, it's not a real, like, physical thing. Like, you can't, like, see it in front of you, but it exists. We know it to be true here in Seattle. That year following when, you know, Super Bowl 49 just was not the same. The Falcons, when they lost the Super Bowl to the Patriots 28-3 when they had that giant lead, I believe they missed the playoffs the very next season. The Patriots, for unbelievably, made it back to the Super Bowl this last season and won it. But they're at this point, you can't even compare the Patriots to really anybody else in the NFL. They're just so wired different over there.
I think also getting to the, like, climbing the mountain is never as difficult as staying atop and living on the top of the mountain as the Patriots do. Gaining that initial success, I think you can, the NFL is set up parity-wise and competition-wise for you to be able to get that initial success. But as the Seahawks experience, sustaining that level of success is really the difficult part. So I think that's LA's biggest question. San Francisco, meanwhile, you've got just a lot of, they're a very intimidating team to me. And I think we don't talk enough about them because they've sort of had this run here of bad luck with a Jimmy Garoppolo, but what if they are all healthy, firing on all cylinders? That's a pretty intimidating team.
Yeah, I think that raises the question of who has the bigger change, the Niners or the Rams? Will the Rams take that step back? Will they regress to the mean?
Yep.
Will they become the Super Bowl hangover team just like everyone else?
And please text us your thoughts.
Exactly.
710-710.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Or will this Niners team, who essentially gets their star quarterback back, they get another defensive end from the top of the NFL draft.
They added a couple of D Ford and also Quan Alexander on the defense, too.
Yep. So you're looking at a team that is adding a lot, plus Richard Sherman, again, going to get healthier, not coming off that major injury like he was this past season. So to me, I actually think that the Niners are going to take a bigger step forward than the Rams take a step back.
It seems like to me that the question marks about the Seahawks are nowhere near as big of importance as the question marks about the Rams, Cardinals, and 49ers. I feel like the Seahawks may have had the easiest offseason of the three other teams in the NFC West. And that's wild to think about because you look at the Seahawks offseason, they said goodbye to Earl Thomas. They had to re-sign their quarterback. They traded away their best defensive lineman for a first-round pick. Like, they had a wild offseason themselves, but I think the Seahawks and their question marks are nowhere near as big as they are of the Cardinals, Rams, and 49ers. And I think that's a good thing. I think that's a really good thing for the Seahawks to be in and to have an offseason that, I mean, yeah, there was drama, but it's not the level of drama. Like, you're not trying to figure out, like, how do we recover from a Super Bowl, or how do we bring along this rookie head coach and quarterback at the same time? Or if you're the 49ers, it's like, all right, we got all the pieces now. Like, there's no more excuses. Like, we got to get going here, or else this is just going to blow up in our face. So, you know, I think right now the Seahawks are in a very enviable position when you look at the rest of the NFC West.
So really quick, let's run through a few of these NFC West predictions. These are just simple questions. Just answer them off the top of your head. Which quarterback in the NFC West will have the most passing yards by year's end?
Jared Goff.
Not including the Seahawks or including the Seahawks?
Including
Sorry.
The Seahawks.
Oh, Russell Wilson.
Most passing yards.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Since, I mean, it'll be interesting knowing how Cliff Kingsbury operates and what they want to do in Arizona.
Yeah. But look, I know he wants to operate that way, but executing that way I think will be a lot different.
Absolutely.
And a lot more difficult at this level. We haven't seen it succeed yet, that air raid style, just keep taking shots down the field yet. And I'm not going to say that it's not going to be successful, But we haven't seen it yet, so I have no evidence to say that this will be successful. So that's why I'm going to say
exactly.
Not yet.
Like, I want to operate as a billionaire, but I know my personnel. Like, yeah. I don't have the kind of personnel to be living that lifestyle. Yeah. I don't know if the Cardinals have the personnel to be putting up 5,000 passing yards every season.
Passing yards, I'd say more Jared Goff in my book, but my next question is touchdowns, and then I'm going with Russell Wilson.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, which team has the best shot at a Super Bowl appearance?
Ooh.
And text in your thoughts to 710-710.
I mean, I still think it's the Seahawks and the Rams. I still think those are the two best teams. I still think the Rams take that step back, and I think the race between the Seahawks and the Rams is tighter, and I think the Niners will be lurking behind them, but I still think it's the two-dog race between those two. And I would give the slight edge just to the Seahawks right now because, like Curtis said, the questions, there aren't as many questions.
Been there, done that.
Yeah, too. I think the Seahawks are, of the NFC West teams, I think this season they have the best shot at a Super Bowl appearance.
Right now.
Okay, cool. I'm going Seahawks as well. And then finally, which team's 2019 draft class do you think will have the biggest year one impact? You, of course, have Nick Bosa in San Francisco. They also picked up a couple of wide receivers to go along with Jimmy Garoppolo, obviously investing in him, and then a punter. Taking a note from the Seahawks book and taking that Utah a dominant punter, Mitch Wishnowski. I can say things.
Yeah.
I got this. And then in Arizona, obviously, Kyler Murray taking another Washington prospect and Byron Murphy, who will meet up with Buda Baker there in the backfield. And then in L.A., also another Washington product, Taylor Rapp going there, picking up a running back in the third round as well. What do you guys think? Which draft class will have the most immediate impact?
Well, it better be the Cardinals. If you have the number one pick and you can't make the biggest impact out of it, then it's been a complete failure.
And I'm going to throw Seahawks in there. You know, they're also
probably. I agree too. Yeah. But yeah, having that number one overall pick, having the ability to take anyone in the NFL draft, and if you cannot capitalize on that, it will be the biggest glaring mark on that franchise. So to me, it's the Cardinals, and it has to be the Cardinals, or else they will be taking a major step back, even from where they are currently.
I feel that. Yeah. I feel that. I'm going Cardinals as well, especially with Patrick Peterson's suspension. You're not only do you have a new quarterback, but Byron Murphy's going to have to slide in and start at cornerback there. I think if the Cardinals are going, and maybe it's an impact one way or another in terms of severity, maybe they have a negative impact, who knows, but I think the Cardinals and how much they're relying on this draft class, that's going to be the biggest difference-making draft class in the division.
Hakeem Butler, too, later round pick, but that guy is an absolute beast. So you're investing in the weapons that you're putting around Kyler Murray as well. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Coming up next on Seattle Sports Saturday, some of the best sound we've heard this week, including some wild fan celebrations, and Danny O'Neill. He's a pen thief. That's next. Curtis Rogers, Lydia Cruz, Taylor Jacobs on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Seattle Sports Saturdays with Lydia Cruz, Curtis Rogers, and Taylor Jacobs
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Welcome back to Seattle Sports Saturdays. Coming up next hour, take a look at the national landscape. We got the NBA Finals, the Stanley Cup Finals, Toronto and St. Louis winning it. Got some pretty happy co-hosts today, this week. I remember last week we came in and both the Blues and Raptors were a game away from clinching their respective titles, and they both lost their very next game. So it was delayed gratification, but in the end it was gratification. With that came some pretty wild fan celebrations, which has become sort of the best part of teams winning championships now, at least from an outside perspective, when you don't have like a rooting interest in either championship, just seeing the wild fan reaction. And Raptors fans, I mean, just Canada in general, it's been since 1993 that was their last professional sports championship, or at least of the four major sports in North America. So they've been waiting a while. And I think Raptors fans, the most notable being Drake.
Yes.
His mind went to a place that, well, he I don't
had
know
a,
if any of
yeah, he had
to.
A post-game interview conference, and quite weird for a fan. Quite weird for anyone not on the court, but Drake is not like anyone off the court. So this is his full 1-minute rant speech inspirational, poetic exploration. Just take a listen.
This is poetic. You just got to watch it happen. The 6-6. Kyle Lowry with the ring. Kawhi Leonard bringing a chip to the city. I want my chips with the dip. That's all I know. I don't want my chips playing. I want my chips with the dip. So bring them dips. That dynasty's over. We did what we had to do. Praying for Katie. Praying for Big Poppy. But tonight belongs to Toronto. It's not about what it means. You know what it means. You can turn your cameras up to the screen and know what it means. We did this. We did this off of heart. We did this off of love. We willed this into existence. We manifested this. I told you the first time. People like to make memes. Make another meme out of this. It's beautiful. Look at my brothers up there celebrating. It is what it is. You see what my hat says. Not finals. Not Eastern Conference. Not nice try. Or see you next year. Champions. Let's go.
Guys, I got to be honest.
Chips with a dip, man.
I am so into this. I am all in on this. I can't get enough of this speech. Chips with the dip. It's poetic. And then saying the poetry of how it's poetic.
I mean, he is part of the team. He's talking part about, of the front office.
It's we.
He's part of the fan base.
They named their practice facility.
I believe they bought the rights to the name. They paid for the rights to the practice facility. And they paid for the rights to the practice jerseys as well. So he's contributing financially to this team. So I guess you could say we, because I guess that's some sort of ownership over this team. But I mean, it's just cuckoo crazy, and I love it. I absolutely cannot get enough.
I love, like, when he gets asked about it. Like,
what does this mean?
He tells the people who are interviewing him, like, just look around, okay? Let's just look around.
Yep.
And, like, when you're in those moments where it's just a giant mass of humanity in a championship moment, like, you know, when we were at the Seahawks parade a few years ago, it was one of those, like, just look around, like, this doesn't happen without a championship coming to your city.
Hey, I want them chips. With what? Huh?
With the dip.
Huh?
With the dizzy.
And with the what?
With the what?
The dizzy.
With the what? With the huh?
I can't get enough of it.
Also putting out two songs yesterday, so nicely putting, using that as a platform also.
I can tell you my wife is already she is disgusted with me. She hates
I love
my
you,
guts that I keep saying chips with the dip. I can't stop saying it.
You know,
it's going to be happening on this show a lot. So
at least for
up.
A full year until you are no longer. Or maybe you'll be repeat champions and then you could just say it forever.
Then we're double dipping, baby.
Right?
Double dip the chip.
Also this week, we just talked about the NFC West.
Yeah.
And Mike Salk, as he is prone to do from time to time, it feels like we should have a counter like days since Salk ripped on somebody. It'd probably be at zero most days. And it certainly was at zero this week with Mike taking shots at the Arizona Cardinals fan base. Well, it got Arizona Sports Radio.
May have been sent there by someone on the Brock and Salk show.
Oh, interesting.
Not myself.
Nice.
Not myself. Absolutely. I avoid conflict at all means, but it might have made its way down there to Arizona. And then they might have responded. Mike Yambo responding to Mike Salk's comments.
We have our misery here. I mean, but misery needs company. That's why we have you, Seattle. Because you haven't won anything either. The hell is Seattle won? By the way, there's only two teams in all of Major League Baseball that have never made the World Series. It's not the Diamondbacks. Seattle is one of them. They've never made the World Series. Yes.
I'm raising my hand again.
Yeah.
They won a Super Bowl a few years ago.
What? That's it?
We
won a World Series here in Arizona.
If the answer,
the hell have they won?
If the answer
Seriously.
Is what have they won, that's
By the way,
sort
hand
the
ball
answer.
To Marshawn and you have two Super Bowls instead of one. You've got one title. Yeah, so what? So do we. The hell is Seattle won? It's like the pot calling the kettle black. What the hell is that? Have they won? Seriously, honestly. I'm not saying we have anything to brag about because we don't. But my God, like you do? What the hell do you have to brag about? Nothing. You have nothing to brag about. Nothing.
It's epic. It continues with people around him on his show also saying,
what about this?
There was the WNBA championship that happened. And, I don't know if anybody mentions the Sounders, but that was also
they do mention the
that
Sounders.
That was also recent. So, yeah, they have won a few things.
Yes.
Interesting. I love the the frenemies or the friendship that the I don't know what you'd call it. What do you call it?
Just a rivalry?
A rivalry. It's like a...
I feel like the rivalry between Seattle and Phoenix only exists between the Brock and Salk show and then
absolutely.
Arizona local sports
yes.
radio. I don't feel like the fan bases of the particular teams
no.
themselves have a hate for each other.
Again, no. if anything, we have more in common because we have been through some hard times together. I would think that sort of bonds us with what their football team has been through is kind of like what our baseball team has been through. So I would think that you'd have some sort of bond
yeah.
over that. Anyway,
yeah.
it's just amazing. And the rant itself is like 5 minutes long. So if you have interest, you can go to and listen to their podcast down in Arizona
yeah.
for the full thing.
Gosh. Wow. You can listen to our podcast on 710sports.com. Click on the podcast page. You can subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts or Google Play. Also Spotify, we're there. Coming up next on Seattle Sports Saturday, we give you our 10 a.m. Big 3, Stanley Cup, NBA Finals, Women's World Cup, U.S. Open. Lots of championship moments going on right now. We'll do our best to sort through them all. That's coming up next right here on Seattle Sports Saturday on 710 ESPN Seattle.